Episode number 3, Depression and the Arts.
Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Are elements of mental illness the principal biological catalyst for creativity? It's an age-old question. Even since the days of Plato, there's always been some sort of association, negative or otherwise, with creativity and mental illness or various forms of depression. But for this show, we're going to try to keep it to mental illness because there's so many other forms out there and we really can't address every one of them, not to mention I don't want to be clinical about it. I want to talk about it in real life situations. I also want to talk about it in the generality of it being a possible obstacle to creativity and how sometimes people even believe it's an aid to creativity. But that's what we want to tackle and go on that path. So let's see. You got Vincent van Gogh as somebody that was seriously dealing with it. Certainly don't recommend cutting off your ear because you're angry with a lover. But it's not hard to understand the stress and the pressure with many artists when they're dealing with this. Now, there is a number of research studies that have come out over the years that seem to indicate that creativity itself doesn't produce mental illness, but it does dwell in some of those what they call unorthodox areas of the brain or even just of reasoning. So it can occupy some of the same areas, but it doesn't necessarily cause it. But if people already have it and they're going into the arts, it can exasperate it. It could be a problem on top of having the mental illness. And that's what we want to talk about today. We want to talk about maybe possible ways to focus and try to understand on it and try to treat it as another obstacle in order to get to creativity. And what I mean obstacle in that situation is not to make light of it, but to also understand that, yes, if you have it, you have to figure out ways to get around it or get through it in order to be able to kind of get to your point of your creative functioning and your creative projects. Now, we have had a number of people over the years in the arts that have to deal with it. I was reading a study over here that suggests that there's a higher risk of anxiety and bipolar in writers, over 25% higher than the normal population. Normal population meaning people who don't, you know, creatively do things. Apparently, there's even a higher one with dancers and photographers, amazing enough. That's something I didn't realize, but when I delved into it to try to learn more, I discovered that dancers and photographers, they interact more with people. And therefore, they have more of an association with reality. So if they're already predisposed to mental illness or already carrying that, you know, that can exasperate it. I can just imagine all the physical work you have to do, become a dancer and then do all those arrangements and have it overcoming, you know, the fear of falling or failing of just an audience. Which is an incredible irony in itself that you must perform for an audience to do these incredible ballet moves. But imagine being a wonderful, gifted dancer, but you're afraid of people. But you have to deal with that. So that's an amazing thing just to contemplate. And I can imagine that the support systems they possibly need. And I know that there's a rate of suicide in that group as well because of not dealing with that. If anyone remembers that movie Black Swan, it was a perfect autobiographical example of a dancer that everyone just stereotypically wrote off as being a diva, not realizing that that person was slipping into mental illness and staying there, and it's gotten worse. And of course, they didn't really recognize it which is another thing to really discuss over here, is the ones that recognize it, the ones that don't, and then, of course, the ones that hide it versus the ones that try to make it a part of their life and let folks know and get some form of treatment. That's a real critical element over here, is doing your best, even in private, to share it with a few people so they know what's going on. And maybe you can speak with them, and maybe they can help encourage you to get some further treatment. We need to remember as artists that as much as we love art, as much as we want to partake in art, we're still human beings. And if we allow depression, mental illness to take a part of that personal life, it's going to eventually eat into the arts anyway. So you should tackle it early. You shouldn't be at odds with your loved ones and your significant others and your family and your children because you don't want to deal with it. You need to deal with it. I know I'm certainly happy to speak to anyone about it. I do that on a regular basis with the VA. I have to deal with PTSD myself from incidents that derive from serving in the Air Force as a military member. And I've looked at it square on and realized that I don't want to have something like that brought back to my home or my family or my children. And naturally, I don't want it to interrupt what I'm doing artistically. I wrote a book about it, Writing as Therapy, Tools to Treat Trauma. It's available at somapublishing.com and all the major ebook outlets. So that's another way to sort of contribute back to society in this subject, which I do take very seriously. So you're not going to hear me make lighter things about it or even make jokes about it, because I think that's the heart of why a lot of people who deal with this, who haven't come forward, hide it. They hide it because they're afraid of the jokes, of the ridicule. Because at the heart of those jokes is, you know, you're not normal and you're never going to be normal. And that's not the case at all. Or somehow you're so different that, you know, we need to be worried about you. And that's what worries people, to keep them out of stepping forward, making a call, going to a group, maybe seeing a professional physician. Maybe they take a lower form of medication that could help take the edge off of that and let you gain back some more reasonable control. It's a balance that I've talked to a lot of writers that they seem to be doing, and it works for a number of people, where they don't go full out in the therapy because they are afraid, whether this is scientifically accurate or not, that the therapy or stronger medication could somehow lessen their creative drive or maybe even eliminate it. I mean, that's what Brian Love believes. He had all these demons and he believed he was using these demons in himself to be able to be creative. But at the same point, it was destroying his health and his family. And he got help. And he feels that he has that all under control. But he also blames it for being less creative, not being able to hear melodies or write songs anymore. Now, it's probably not hard to make a simple judgment that you've had a long career and do you need to do more? I mean, should you not just be happy with life and, you know, financial security you've got and your family and the fact that you regained your health? It's not an invalid viewpoint, but, you know, if you're an artist like you and I, you're like, heck no, you go out there and write some more songs. Why not? There's joy in that. There's love in that. We wouldn't mind hearing something new. So that's something that people also face too, that fear that, hey, this might harm what I'm trying to become or what I am becoming or what I am already, an artist. And I understand that. So I wouldn't want to push anybody to have that happen to them. But I think they owe it to themselves, certainly to their loved ones, and maybe even to the arts, to at least explore different forms, different ways, different methods that can help at least keep that under control, keep that under wraps, keep that into a way where you can manage it like any other kind of condition, you know, diabetes or, you know, I hear now that with HIV, it's possible to manage it now from the antiviral medications that are coming out and how they're becoming so much more affordable that folks can literally live a long and normal health lifespan now because of that. So it is possible to do so, but I do believe sincerely that isolating yourself is a road to destruction. You're going to destroy your health. Eventually, you'll destroy your relationships. You'll destroy your any sort of sense of reliability, and you might even destroy your art in the end. So why risk all of that? In case you've noticed, there's been another rash of suicides in the celebrity world. And if you read the articles carefully, and you read some of the background, as much as you can, you know, find, it's not hard to see. It's not hard to visualize that they spent a lot of time hiding what they were struggling with. They spent a lot of time not dealing with it, thinking it's going to go away, trying to find ways to deal with it, which of course made it worse, because oftentimes the people that have mental illness, instead of going to a more constructive path, therapy, group therapy, writing therapy, some form of medication, some people do yoga and meditation, etc. They'll go to alcohol. They'll go to these illegal drugs, and that only makes things worse. It doesn't ever handle that. So you'll see a real preponderance of folks that are struggling with depression, hiding it, and then doing things that are wrong that make it worse. And you'll find in many of these cases over here, that's what's happening with them. In fact, in many of these cases, they didn't die from the mental illness. They died from the things that they were trying to use illegally and wrongfully that wound up making it worse. And in some cases, they died from the overdose of that. Prince would be a perfect example of somebody who was obviously suffering from some version of mental illness, still was very creative, but he wasn't dealing with it correctly at all. I doubt he was seeing anybody professionally. I mean, it was obvious that he delved into religion for a while, hoping that was going to do something, and it didn't. And then he wound up going to illegal drugs, which eventually stopped his heart in the elevator. Horrible. What a genius and what a wonderful individual. Everybody who really had any contact with him said that, sure, he was a perfectionist and, you know, a bit of a pain artistically, because that's how those folks are. But in terms of being a generous human being and a decent one, no one had anything bad to say about that, because that's the kind of person he was. But inside, he was dealing with something, and he didn't do a whole lot of sharing. In fact, he didn't even do a whole lot of sharing in his music. You don't hear a whole lot about him being depressed. Some folks do that, but he didn't. In fact, he always seemed to have a more positive outlook, which, again, could be an interesting way to hide it. You know, I'll try to stick to the positive, and maybe that'll do something. Well, it doesn't if you don't actually just tackle, you know, the basic root causes. So that's really what, if you want to call it, the message for the show is, you don't want to isolate yourself and put yourself at further risk. Now, there's some studies here that I'd like to share with you that are pretty interesting. One of the first ones was, there was a study done in Colombia, which suggests that writers, dancers, photographers, they have a higher risk of anxiety and bipolar disorders. The one that I really find interesting was in 2015, so this is really, really very, very recent, in Iceland, where they had a study that they felt was conclusive, that people in creative professions were 25% more likely to have some kind of general variant of a bipolar disorder. There was a co-founder, his name is Carrie Stephenson, of the Decode Genetics Project. And he's quoted as saying, often when people are creating something new, they end up straddling between sanity and insanity. So I think that's that incredible quote, but also the amazing thought of, you might not bring yourself to mental illness by being creative, but apparently you do occupy some of the areas that somebody that is mentally ill can be at. Some of the unorthodox way of thinking or seeing the world, which they do, can also have a creative contact or a creative connect. So it's wrong to say, you know, if somebody is a creative, that they must be must have some form of depression. But it's also wrong to say that if they do have it, that somehow it's gonna stop them. No, if they can manage it, you know, professionally, with some assistance, talking with folks, getting some kind of help and sharing it, that sends to mitigate some of it, and they can continue on to use the creative places they go to aid their work. And there's nothing wrong with that, because there's plenty of examples of doing that. I know the woman that wrote I Never Promised You a Road Garden, she made that really clear that, hey, I'm suffering from mental illness, and I've seen the treatment all my life. And guess what? I was able to manage it, and I was able to use my mental illness and those sort of periods when I had issues to my creative advantage. I tried to work with it, and it was successful. And thankfully, that's somebody that continued to be prolific, because they were able to understand that. I know a lot of people, they don't, because they feel they're alone, or they feel that they must be in some sort of closet. And I'm telling you right now, even though society doesn't completely understand this, and even though society can be stereotypical at times, they need to be educated, and they can't be educated just by somebody like me on this show. That's just a part of it. They need to see and hear from real-life examples. You know, people in their professions, people in their communities, people in the films that they love or the songs that they hear. They need to also be reminded on that level too. So you coming out and saying something is important. It's also important for yourself personally, because you can't establish the kind of relationships you want if you're hiding something that serious. You can't be dating somebody and spring it on them 3 years later. Yes, I want to marry you, but by the way, I've been dealing with depression and I never told you for 3 years. It's not the way to start anything, by being less than honest. I know the fear, and I understand it. And God knows I'm empathetic to it and sympathetic to it. But in the end, if you're going to go forward in any kind of healthy manner, relationships, family, marriage, and even the art, you need to be able to be getting out there and saying something. You don't have to have a loudspeaker for the whole world, or even one for your community, but at least the people around you need to know. They could be an important factor on helping you. And maybe you make some choices on some that should know and others that can't know, because you don't think that maybe they would handle it right. And that's fine, and that's fair, because I'm not asking anyone to do anything that's not fair to them. You don't have to tell every single one of your family members if you don't feel, you know, they're all going to respond in a manner that's going to be helpful to you. And that's fine too, because it makes sense. Don't abandon common sense just because you're trying to, you know, improve yourself. You still have to keep that in mind. And I'm perfectly fine with understanding that. I'm sure I deal with people all the time who don't tell me this sort of stuff, who don't want to tackle it in that kind of fashion. I do plenty that tell me privately, but they still don't come out, but that I know, and I'll keep that secret. But I still try to employ them as much as I can without being annoying, that it's important for them to come out, make some contacts, figure out what's going on, just come up with some basic strategy to try to at least manage it. All right, we're going to go to a quick break here. All right, folks, I want to mention my affiliates. Wix.com, an excellent place, especially if really in the beginning of learning and trying to understand how to use the web to promote your art, promote your portfolio. Some people put a writing portfolio out. Others, like photographers or like visual artists, will have some clips of some of their work. They kind of use it like a resume. Wix can help you do that. You build a site easily. They got premium plans that are not expensive at all, very affordable. You don't have to be some IT expert. You can use this site, build something that you can use. It's going to aid your art. Another excellent place, PicMonkey. It's a graphic design site. You can alter a photograph. You can add words to it, different fonts. I think I like about 100 different fonts. You could just take a blank background and put pictures and images and designs and words and create book covers. Create banners for your site over at Wix. Or you could just create advertisements, so whatever project you're doing. Hey, I'm going to be in a play in 3 weeks from now, and this little block of information I could put on a couple of sites and let people know. Go check it out. Or wait for the link that's going to come out. You can see it on the internet. that sort of thing. But it's an excellent site, very affordable. Again, very easy to use. You don't have to be some great graphic person. I know I can speak for myself because I use it and I've subscribed to it, but also as a writer. Many writers, they suffer from, I can write words and I can visualize all kinds of stuff, but I'm not really good on actually doing something that's image related. Well, guess what? That site will help you to do so. It's easy. After you do a couple of things and you make a couple of images, suddenly you'll have all these ideas because now you know what you're doing. It is easy. And you can become a real creator of this. I mean, you're not going to be on par with somebody that uses the lot more expensive professional programs, but then those people use that for a professional reason. They're graphic artists and they're advertisers and etc. But for our purposes as writers, oh yeah, it's perfect. It really is. And then photographers can also use it too. If they want to put certain things in frames, they want to post things in a certain manner, they want to maybe make some fun artistic alterations to the work they did. It's an excellent one for that too. And of course, I want to mention Soma Publishing, eBooks with an Edge, an excellent site. You'll see many examples of various different writings. Another great example is John Patrick Robbins. He's what he calls himself, a barroom poet, but basically story poems, interesting story poems. Not a lot of abstract theories about art and the nature of the world. It's personal stories about his life and the people and the situations that he encounters, you know, and it's done in a humorous way. It's always done in right in your face kind of way. That's for sure. He doesn't filter anything, and that's fine because it makes him unique and it makes him abundantly honest and very, very entertaining. So check him out. He's got an ebook out called Smoking at the Gas Pumps. Great title. You can probably already image what he's going to be talking about. Love, having fun at the bar, things that he's encountered in the art world, his relationships, some family things, just a wonderful collection of things that can be poignant and that can be funny and even provocative. So check it out at somapublishing.com. All right, another recent study, very interesting, is the one from Iceland. It's done in 2015, so it's not too far away from the year 2019 now. But it conclusively suggests that people in creative professions are 25% more likely to see some sort of a gene variant in their risk for anxiety and bipolar. One of the co-founders of Decode Genetics, Carrie Stephenson, they make the extraordinary claim that often when people are creating something new, they end up straddling between sanity and insanity. I bring this up because not only is it a very interesting and even possibly provocative quote, but I feel that when many of the other studies have mentioned that as you're a creator, you're going into some of those unorthodox areas that often mentally ill people also see and deal with, there is an association. This is not to say that if you're a creative person and you haven't been born with mental illness or hasn't, you know, come upon you that suddenly you're going to become mentally ill. It just means that some of the creative areas you're going to, the unorthodox areas, as they say, there's some association there. So it's something to keep in mind. And it's also to keep in mind if you are somebody suffering from some version of mental illness, that it is going to help and create your creativity, but you still need to manage it because it's not going away suddenly. But if you don't manage it, it only makes things worse, and then it eventually will affect you in a reverse way where you won't be a creative anymore or you'll have struggles there. And no one wants to continue to have struggles all their life, personal, work, art, just because they don't want to handle it. So as much as I would like people to come out more about, hey, this is what I'm struggling with and this is what I'm going to try to do to get some version of a treatment, I think it's more important that they at least acknowledge it to themselves and kind of work from there. So maybe you don't come out right away. Or maybe you go get some help privately without telling anybody, including your family. Maybe that's your first step. It's not my ideal way of encouraging when I think about how folks should really progress on this, but if that's the first step that you can do, it's still better than never saying anything to anybody, not doing anything about it, and then just being in denial on top of all of that. That's just the worst case of all the scenarios. So I'll take the one that's less worse and go from there. But there are people you can talk to, professional and otherwise. You could share with people in group meetings or others. You'll find that others have some of the same thing. And you can trade some remedies or some ways that you do to get around it or to deal with it or to go through it. It's not a bad thing. In a form, it's its own type of therapy. And it's going to help you in your arts. It's going to help you just with the confidence that, hey, somebody else is also dealing with this. I am not alone. And that's what you don't want to have a feeling of, is that somehow you're alone in this. And I'm telling you right now, that's not an accurate feeling. So it's not hard for you to grab a phone or the internet or anything and notice that there are a lot of people that are dealing with this. You're not the only one. So it's all about you trying to do something about it, taking that responsibility. This way you can become creative and also you can become a happier person in the rest of your life. A lot of famous persons have gone through all of this. Many of them are writers, like Ernest Hemingway, although I think he had a genetic situation because a lot of the Hemingways seem to have had a form of mental illness and ultimately had committed suicide. So that might be a special case, but nevertheless, is somebody that was able to deal with it and was very creative, but they really didn't for a long time deal with it. But eventually, Ernest Hemingway, he used that electroshock therapy they used to use in the past. There's been some controversies of how useful that is or not. I've heard that they modified it to where it's supposed to become more effective. But when he used it, I don't know how much effective that was, and it might have made his situation worse. But at least you give him credit that, you know, he was making an honest attempt. He wasn't just sitting there drinking, writing novels and saying, woe is me. He was trying to do something about it. So, you know, God bless him. And others, they didn't do much about it. And unfortunately, it resulted in many of them hurting themselves or even dying from other things because of that root cause of depression. Sylvia Plath, Robert Lowell. Beethoven, we learned from his letters that he was definitely bipolar, because, you know, we can't really talk to anyone that knew him, because we're talking about like the 1600s here. Carrie Fisher, that's somebody that came out openly, God bless her, but as you can imagine, her dealing with that for a long time, she dealt with it in the wrong way, using illicit drugs and things like that, and I think it really damaged her physical health, and she wound up dying from complications because of not dealing with the depression, you know, sooner than later. She did her best, I'm sure, under her circumstances, but that's what can happen. You can have other damage otherwise. You'll note that many of the celebrities, especially that have committed suicide, they did so because the underlying factor was depression, mental illness. They didn't share it oftentimes with a lot of people. I mean, you got folks like Prince, he was obviously struggling with that, wind up dying from a drug overdose. People like Robin Williams, who did towards the end talk about it a bit, but and he eventually committed suicide. You know, it wasn't because he was unhappy with his career. He was dealing with that unfortunate mental illness, and he was actually trying to get help. It just unfortunately didn't work for him. Mariah Carey, that's somebody that's come out as bipolar and continued to try to deal with that. Another wonderful action actor, George Van Clam Dam, he was someone that continues to deal with that issue. And I know it for a while hurt his career. He's going back into it again. And, you know, all the good luck to him that he's trying to regain his focus and his life. You know, and we're going to wish him luck on that because he seems to be getting back into form, so you have to hope he's still going to have a longer career, even though he did have an interruption of that. One of the things that we have to really consider is the fact that even though mental illness is out there, and even though the public doesn't understand it, we do have some basic responsibility if we don't want to confess what we are dealing with as a form of educating the public. We have to make sure that we ourselves not accidentally or deliberately feeding into some of the jokes and the stereotypes that go with that, because those are incredibly harmful. Not only on damaging the view of people in the public, but it also really damages other people who are struggling with it, because now that they're less likely to ever come out because everybody is feeding into this sort of stuff. I know I've always been concerned and sometimes upset that Hollywood treats the PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, in our military veterans especially, they treat it like a joke or a character or some sort of silly type, you know. You watch a show that's a series, and oh boy, he goes the episode on that, and you know, in the end, the person went from being okay to, you know, suddenly losing all their grip on reality, and now they're grabbing a gun and holding people hostage and doing incredibly ridiculous things. Let me tell you something. There's only a fraction of people that even suffering from that ever happens to. Because there are plenty of people that deal with that, especially as military veterans coming back from conflicts. There's not a whole spat of all these military people doing things, in case you notice anything in the news, folks. So that ought to tell you right there that that's just a small portion of it. They shouldn't all be painted that same way. And the ones that do, unfortunately, do that, you know, let's deal with them in humane fashion. We're talking about people that put their life on hold to get another life with a gun and a soldier, and out in the field of people who hated them and tried to harm them. So let's all treat them as they should be treated. You know, respect the members of our community and in many instances, heroes. They don't deserve to be treated like criminals or people who are just like constantly unstable, because that's not the case at all. And we probably help exasperate that by letting Hollywood get away with that. So I've never been someone that's happy with that, and I got no problem dashing over, you know, an email to a studio or about an episode or a movie or something. Can you get a consultant over there? Or is that me, somebody else maybe? But can you get somebody over there that's going to educate you, so the writers of these shows are just not, you know, liberally putting you know, that person as that stereotype, because it reinforces things. It gets running again and again and again, and it reinforces some real negative, you know, views of people with mental illness. I think it affects artists too, don't get me wrong, but that's something I personally are committed to trying to eliminate. That is that ridiculous image where, you know, the bad person on the show or the unstable person on the show just happens to be a veteran dealing with all kinds of trauma. Gee, thanks. Let's try to eliminate that. If you're going to make that as a focus of an episode, fine, but do it in some kind of constructive and realistic manner. Well, I'm not suggesting these things don't happen. I'm not suggesting you need to shy away from all of that or never put that out there. I'm not looking for any denial. I'm certainly not looking for any dishonesty, but let's deal with it humanely and squarely. Don't make this person into some semi-terrorist or something, because that's not the case at all. If you do it right, and I've seen shows that have done it right, it makes sense. And people can empathize. And they can say, yeah, I like to see some of my tax dollars, you know, increase the budget for the VA to help with that. I like to see some of my tax dollars increase the component of drug counseling that also has a depression education factor in it. I'm a big believer of that. I even wrote the Trump administration about that. Just don't put these treatment centers out there and don't deal with depression. Oftentimes the people who are addicted to alcohol and drugs, that was the underlying factor, the depression. They didn't just suddenly do this because it's a continuation from college days, or it's because of some singular traumatic incident. Not the sense that not to say it doesn't happen, that does. But you'll find more times than not, a great percentage, it's because they were dealing with that other factor that they haven't really talked about. I find it incredible that these treatment centers will treat the people physically for these ailments, but they don't ever talk about or deal with or try to refer them to the depression. And then they wonder why they come back, you know, to the drugs a year or two later. Oh, not again. Well, yeah, again, because you're not really treating the underlying cause. You're physically helping them wean off a drug or an alcohol. That's not the same thing as tackling what's causing them to go there in the first place, because they're trying to get relief. Trying to get relief in their lives. Trying to get relief in, maybe sometimes the arts they can do. They could also be an autistic person. Additionally, struggling with that. So I'm definitely proposing that more and more, and talking about that more and more, and trying to see that happen. I like to see the day where Hollywood deals with this more squarely on the drug addiction and the depression component. And of course, especially with PTSD. And I like to see more of these centers including this. And if they don't have the funds, or they don't have the personnel, they don't have the even the ability to deal with it at that center, then they should be connecting with some place that does, so they could do an active referral and follow up. Hey, I'm calling about Joe, and we're treating him for alcohol, but we also want to make sure that he's dealing with his depression. How's that coming along? Folks, this is not a difficult thing to accomplish. We just need to be able to tackle it in society rather than making it, you know, one of those unmentionable things. I remember years ago when I was growing up that cancer used to be a thing you didn't talk about. Don't talk about the C word. Now it seems to be mental illness. I mean, you find out families years later were just hiding somebody that had a mental illness, literally hiding them in the basement or a closet, not letting them talk to anybody in the family or in the outside world because they were embarrassed. Oh, how wonderful. Thank you. Let's not let that happen, because every time we don't talk about something like this, if not publicly, maybe privately, but when we have the absence of the conversation, you're letting those people out there who have a hating aspect to it all, who have an intolerant view of it all, you let them win. You let them continue to, you know, have the upper hand in all this. And then that's wrong, because I honestly believe that if many of these people we know in our lives, and many of these people we know from the celebrity world and the artistic world, if they could talk about that, if they can actively get that depression engaged, if they did something about it, maybe that would help them to not be addicted, and maybe that would have helped them been happier. Maybe that would have helped them to not even contemplate suicide, let alone go through with it. Maybe lives could have easily have been saved just because it's now become a public mantra. Hey, this person has a drug addiction. Don't forget to look at anything else that could be causing this. Maybe possibly depression. That's something they should be looking for now on. It should be a standard thing. Don't get me wrong now. Not every drug addicted person has it. You're going to find folks that don't. They have other issues. Fine. But there's a real component there. There's a real percentage there that we should face. And it could be why people constantly return back to drugs, to alcohol. Could be why they constantly return back to prison. Again, because of that component. And how is it possible that prisons, which many people seem to have a negative view on, can deal with depression more than a drug center? You got to be in cuffs and have your freedom taken away for someone to take your depression seriously? Come on now. So we might have that a little bit backwards. Don't get me wrong. We should have this in the prisons, but it needs to be in other places too. The VA is taking it very seriously. As much of the criticism you hear about that, they still are a major sponsor of trying to learn more and try to treat people. And I find that they do a good job on that. But your average drug center, either private or public, well, there's a lot of work over there. And that's not to say to criticize them. That's just to say that they should have that component there, and we should be pushing for that. So let's recap some of the things we're talking about on this show, and that is depression in the arts. It's possible that if you have depression, you were born with it. You might have known since you're a child. And now you have to struggle and deal with that. And many times it's not dealt with properly because you hide it or you deny it or you use other things like alcohol, drugs, or some people have sex addictions and it's all about being a depressed person. So you go into things that you think are going to help, but they don't. And then, of course, you have other folks that they might discover later on that they have it. And how do they deal with that so that it doesn't harm their lives? And then, of course, you have a lot of folks that they don't have this at all, but they might have some anxiety. Say they might have some just normal things that they have to deal with, but they're not necessarily somebody that's depressed on any kind of consistent manner, and they want to be creative. I've heard someone say that writer's block is some kind of mild form of depression. I haven't seen any studies about that, and my own personal view is you can get writer's block just from having some emotional constipation. It doesn't have to be some sort of depression. It could have been a traumatic event you had that's going to be temporary, like a breakup of a girlfriend or boyfriend, or maybe a medical procedure. You know, somebody goes through some serious surgery. You know, it's not so easy just to go sit down at that desk and, you know, and write poems about deers in the forest. You know, you might want to have to regroup for a while, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're suffering from depression. So I'm not really sure about writer's block being in that. Now, there probably are people who have depression that could also have writer's block, and there can be a real relationship there. And I don't deny that. That's a real possibility. But in general, when writers have writer's block, it usually doesn't have anything to do with depression. It usually has to just do with emotionally or psychologically, you're dealing with something temporarily. And when you get through it and you get through the block, and then you can move on. Well, I'm very excited, of course, to have everyone on the show. I'm appreciating the feedback I've been getting. This will, of course, be some interesting feedback to have. I've been honest and straight about it. Nothing that I would consider alarmist or, you know, exaggerating. Certainly nothing that would make light or joke of anything, because I just don't think any of this sort of thing is funny. It's serious. It can be debilitating. But also, folks, there's a positive side to mental illness in the sense that once you recognize it and you strive to get some treatment, you're automatically going to feel better about many things, including your art, because you'll treat it like any other condition that a person has that can be an obstacle that they might be able to manage. You know, blood pressure, diabetes, HIV. I know it might sound unusual to hear me, you know, associate mental illness with those things, but I happen to believe that mental illness can be a condition that's treatable and that it could be managed. And if you take it seriously, understand that it's there, don't look at it as some incredible enemy, but something that's with you that you have to deal with, then you can move on to the more positive aspects of your life. And you don't have to be singling yourself out or being singled out by a society that will continue to learn and understand as we come out and make it known that we want to operate in the world like anyone else. We don't want to be treated differently. And more importantly, we don't want to treat ourselves differently because of people's reactions. I wish you all well. My next show is going to be about dreams and the creative functions in our life. So that's going to be very interesting. And I think people will be very interested in hearing about that. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.